Well, hello, and thank you all for being here. As I was telling Dave before, public speaking is probably at the very top of my list of things I don't like to do. So I'm fairly nervous right now. I have my notes and I have my flip chart in case my mind goes blank. But I was glad to be asked to talk to you about centering prayer because it's something that I believe in and something that is very important. I've been practicing centering prayer for 20 years now, and I know it to be a powerful and transforming form of prayer. So this morning we're going to talk about what is it, where does it come from, and why do it. Centering prayer is a modern expression of a very ancient Christian tradition. It's one carefully adapted expression of the ancient tradition of contemplative prayer. Contemplative prayer was practiced and taught by the desert fathers and mothers back in the 3rd and 4th centuries. And then it's been taught and practiced on down through the centuries by a long list of contemplatives. And this is a list of names, many of whom you will recognize. Whoops, not that one. Oh, well, I got ahead of myself, see? But it's a list of, oh, it is here. You may want to see some of these names and realize, yeah. People like John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila, Gregory the Great, Thérèse of Lisieux, Meister Eckhart, Julian of Norwich, on down into modern times with Thomas Merton and Thomas Keating, names that we do know. This type of contemplative prayer has been known through the centuries by a lot of different names. It's been called the prayer of the heart. It's been called the prayer of faith. It's been called the prayer of simplicity, among others. The centering prayer revives a method of prayer based on The Cloud of Unknowing, which is a book that was written by an anonymous monk in the 14th century, and also on the teachings of John of the Cross. It's an effort to present the teachings of an earlier time in an updated form more appropriate to us today. In early centuries, contemplation, which in the context that we are talking about means resting in God beyond words, beyond thoughts, beyond emotions. And this type of contemplation was the intention and the goal of all prayer in earlier centuries. We can see this if we look at an example of a traditional prayer practice, Lectio Divina, which is something I believe most of you will be familiar with. When we look at Lectio, the first movement is the reading of the scripture or a spiritual text and listening deeply to that word until something strikes us. And when something strikes us as meaningful, we pluck that word or that phrase. We carry it with us into the next movement, which is Meditatio. At this time, then we ponder that word or that phrase. And I choose this word ponder because it's not mental thinking about it. It's pondering like the Bible talks of Mary pondered these things in her heart. So we ponder this word or this phrase, and the mind begins to descend into the heart. And there it breaks open the meaning of this word for us. When that happens, then we move into oratio, a heartfelt, prayerful response to what is this meaning that has been opened to us. It might be thanksgiving, it might be praise, it might be petition. When that's done, then the next movement is to move into the silence of contemplatio, resting in God. It was Guigo II in the 12th century who said about Lectio, the first degrees are of little or no use without the last, while the last can hardly ever be won without the first. So you see that this was a unity. This was a movement of the spirit within us into contemplation. And that was the practice for most forms of prayer in early centuries. It was Gregory the Great who summed up the Christian contemplative tradition at the end of the 6th century as the deep knowledge of God that is impregnated with love. He called this resting in God. In this resting, the mind is not so much seeking God as it is beginning to experience what it's been seeking. Effort has been reduced to a simple movement of consent, consenting to God's presence and transforming action within. This resting is a gift from God. It's not something we can do. It's not something we can make happen. And that's where centering prayer comes in. Centering prayer is a method that's designed to facilitate our ability to receive this gift. And it does this by reducing the obstacles to contemplation. Obstacles like overactivity, busyness, overdependence on thinking, self-absorption, preoccupation with ourselves. All of these things are obstacles to resting in the presence of the God who is already with us. In later centuries, prayer became compartmentalized. Discursive meditation, prayer, this pondering, contemplation became not so much connected acts in one period of prayer, but they became separate forms of prayer, each one of them with their own purpose, their own method, their own aim. And this compartmentalization led to the notion that contemplation was an extraordinary grace that was reserved for the few, and usually the few who lived in monasteries. I know that is the atmosphere of prayer that I grew up with, and probably most of you did as well. In the 1970s, three monks in Spencer, Massachusetts, Thomas Keating, William Miniger, and Basil Pennington, had begun to update the practice of contemplative prayer to a form more accessible for their modern novices. As they were doing this, they began to notice how many young people were flocking to the nearby Buddhist meditation centers. And they realized that among lay people, there was a growing hunger for a contemplative dimension in their lives. And the Buddhists, through centuries, had developed a very clear and structured technique for teaching meditation, something that didn't exist in the Christian tradition. So with Vatican II, they were encouraged to develop a method that was available to those of us who live ordinary lives. And with this, centering prayer expanded the Christian contemplative tradition into a way of living in the world. So why do centering prayer? We are all called to a relationship with the divine, and this is one method of fostering that relationship. Centering prayer nurtures and supports the desire to go deeper in relationship with God, and it's a way of cooperating with God in God's transforming work in our lives and in the world. In Matthew 6:6, Jesus suggests how to pray. He says, "Go into your room, shut the door, and pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you." Abba Isaac said we pray in our room when we withdraw our hearts from the tumult and noise of our thoughts and our worries, and secretly and intimately offer our prayer to the Lord. Centering prayer is one carefully adapted interpretation of Jesus' remarks. It's basically a how-to method for us today. And the reward given in secret is the divinely initiated transformation of our lives. John of the Cross said, God spoke one world from all eternity, and it is spoken in an eternal silence, and it is in silence that we hear it. So centering prayer is a method to facilitate our ability to enter the silence where we hear God. So that's centering prayer in a nutshell. I have here a DVD that I'd like to show you that'll give you a further perspective on centering prayer and on contemplative outreach, which is Contemplative Outreach International is the organization that evolved to administratively support the spread of centering prayer in the world. And last year they celebrated their 30th anniversary, and this DVD was developed at that time. Just that first one.
There are many people that are curious of the relationship, the spiritual bond between contemplative outreach and St. Benedict's Monastery. And in particular, what is my take on it as abbot of St. Benedict's, and I've been abbot here 28 years, so it goes back to just about the beginning of the relationship. And the first thing that comes to my mind is when I look at contemplative outreach, I see it as an extension of the experience of our monastic life being made available to a much wider audience, you might say, or a much wider range of practitioners. I see that the experience of Father Thomas Keating, Basil Pennington, and William Menninger, these people had lived the monastic life for decades before they got together and tried to formulate a way to communicate that to other people, to make it understandable and available to people who weren't living in a cloister and weren't following a monastic schedule, but still had this calling to the deep, quiet, contemplative prayer. And in fact, we're finding it hard to find guides for that kind of prayer. So Father Thomas, Father William, Father Basil tried to come up with this method, and they did, and it spread, and it spread rather fast. Our connection in particular came about when Father Thomas Keating retired as abbot of Spencer and came back to Snowmass, St. Benedict's Monastery, where he had been prior before being elected abbot of Spencer. And when he came back, he became the guest master, and he tried to do a good job helping people into the experience of prayer and contemplation. And that's when he thought more seriously of organizing the preparation and the presentation of centering prayer so that it would have not only an ability to go out there, but a support system to hold it in place and to encourage it and to open new frontiers as it moved along. And he did this in a couple different formats. The local parish priest asked him to come down right to Basalt. He gave something to the monks. And most importantly, I think, in the process was the Lama retreat that he gave to a certain number of people. And from there, the flame took off. So I've always felt a closeness to it because I've felt it is our monastic life made available and shared by a much wider range of people than we have in the monastery cloister. And we have the same source, the same nourishment, and we're totally taken up in the same experience of that openness to the communion with the infinite loving God. So it's really a question of feeling we are brothers and sisters in the same process, that we're coming.
I'm stopping it because this is not exactly the part of the DVD I wanted to show you, but it, I hope you've been interested in hearing Father Abbott, I mean the Abbott there. Let's see, we'll look at the...
Where do you want that to be?
There was a list of...
Yeah, there, in the beginning there's a menu, yeah.
This menu, I don't know if you can get the disc.
It was what you had up first, when you first saw something on the screen. It was there, and it said which one each was. Well, what, if you just go back, maybe?
That's
Yeah, just start over. Good idea.
Okay, what do you got there?
That's not what we saw.
Here we come, maybe.
That's it.
Okay. Well, maybe that was it. I just wasn't far enough into it.
Necessity.
No, that first one, celebrating.
Yeah.
That's the one we were on.
That's. No. We were listening to Abbott Boyle. So try that
one.
Yeah, try that one. Yeah.
We live in a very fast world right now.
There's just so much to keep up with.
My head is full of thoughts.
Mind is always busy. We need more and more. We're also tethered to electronic gadgets.
We have so multiplied the possibility of distraction.
It's hard to relax and rest.
We need somebody out there encouraging us as a society, as a body of Christ, as a family, to sit still, be quiet, listen to God. And that's what I think contemplative outreach does.
Centering prayer is to further the movement into resting in God, interior silence, and surrender.
I say, yes, I'm here, and then I just try not to say anything.
Porque yo, la oración entrante, yo entiendo que uno no la puede hacer como para ver lo que pasa, con una expectativa de que me pasa a mí si yo hago esto. No, es una ofrenda.
It is prayer. It is an open loving of God.
Just show up for a meditation, a couple times a day.
It's really just sitting quietly with your eyes closed, a sacred time that you spend with God.
We need silence, and I think that's one big message, is be still and know I'm God.
Centering prayer gave me an actual experience of the divine love that turned everything around for me.
We're consenting to God's presence and action in our life. Twice a day for 20 minutes, enter into this prayer.
That's something new, just being silent. Especially a verbal person like me. It was hard.
Contemplative prayer is a way of occupying the mind and transferring it to the heart so that it becomes more heartfulness than mindfulness.
It's a practice worthwhile pursuing and being diligent. If I think my schedule's too hectic to practice my centering prayer, then it seems like nothing falls into place. We allow God to transform us. We just show up and God does the rest.
Letting go leaves room for new life. That prayer bubbles over into the activity of everyday life.
Ahora encuentro que soy una persona más abierta, más despierta a todo lo que me rodea.
Seeing spirituality as part and parcel of every moment of our lives.
For me, it brings back the wonder of life. It's almost like dancing or playing with God.
I have something to neutralize the intensity of life that comes up. That is not an expression of God's love or presence or action in my life.
It's like a little voice in the background that says, pause, wait a minute. where's God here?
I am more honest and humble than I was before I began centering prayer.
I become able to accept others as they are.
Allowing me to come to appreciate the wholeness of other people and feel a kinship for them.
A deepening understanding of people who are difficult to understand.
I see myself as more patient.
In couples counseling, if couples start doing centering prayer together, it's amazing.
Y el Señor me ha transformado. Me lo dicen mis hijos, me lo dice mi esposo, mi compañero de vida. Ya tenemos 50 años de casado.
Let me tell you how it really has helped me when I get behind the wheel of an automobile.
I can miss my vitamins in the morning, but if I miss my prayer in the morning, it's a difficult day.
Once you've been touched, it needs to be shared.
I facilitate a group on Saturdays, and I see it changing their lives.
We have a prison ministry, and I really see God gifting these people and gifting us to be part of that ministry.
There's 85 chapters in the United States, and there's 24 chapters internationally.
With the newsletter and the website, I'm aware of the practitioners all over this world.
There's listings of online groups. There's listing of online courses and retreats and workshops.
I don't think it's any accident that the birth of contemplative outreach kind of coincides with the birth of the World Wide Web.
Extensión Contemplativa is the Spanish branch of contemplative outreach. They've made available online courses, all in Spanish. The internet. That's also been a very important way for us to maintain our own unity and deepen our own communication, a virtual community.
Finalmente le doy gracias a Dios por haber puesto mi travesía espiritual, extensión contemplativa, y formar parte de esta bella y extraordinaria comunidad.
In Hong Kong, there's a group that meets regularly. South Africa, England, Ireland, Philippines. And a new group is starting near Beijing.
It gives us a global community that I'm experiencing now in an e-course that I'm taking. Contemplative outreach has nursed me with materials, topics, people, conferences,
retreats, books, CDs.
There's over 800 trained presenters, a large group.
It is all that underlying structure that lets our Minnesota Contemplative Chapter function. But it's also knowing that worldwide people are connected.
The history of monasticism informs a way that we can choose to live. Praying in the morning and praying in the evening, and accepting an awareness of God during the day.
I started writing proposals for contemplative outreach around 1970, something for lay people, that lay people could have a spiritual life, a delivery system for the Holy Spirit.
We are brothers and sisters in the same process. Father Thomas Keating, Basil Pennington, and William Menninger found a way to share it.
We didn't even think of centering prayer. It didn't even have a name. So the thought arose, challenged by the excellent methods that Eastern spiritual teachers were providing in the West of trying to put this contemplative tradition into a method. People had no training whatsoever in the mystical tradition. So I wrote books to bring people up to the same page.
I was on a retreat in the early 80s with Father Thomas, and he knew that there were people thirsting for silence, and he knew they weren't being fed at the parish level. We kind of sat there and heard this wish that he could have help. And contemplative outreach formed in 84.
After that experience in New Mexico, Bob Bartel, Mary Murzowski, and I joined in for this Chrysalis House, the live-in community. Mary threw her hat in with these two young hippie contemplatives. Kathy McCarthy came.
I would go to Gail's, and we created the first handbook of all the events that go on in contemplative outreach.
It was a laboratory.
Thomas was like the theory behind everything, and Mary made it happen.
Out of her inspiration came the welcoming prayer, a way of doing Lectio Divina in ordinary life, all these practices. And then after 11 years, the chrysalis broke open.
We went where we were invited, and it kept on growing. It's really the work of God.
I am so grateful for Centering Prayer and Contemplative Outreach, and I feel like I've found a new home.
I really believe that Centering Prayer is a pathway back to religion for a lot of people.
Open-minded, open-hearted people willingly introduce the prayer to others.
The value of Contemplative Outreach is that it provides the structure for this. The how-to.
The vision that we have for Contemplative Outreach is to reach out to the world.
Open to all religions and all faiths.
As an Army chaplain, Centering Prayer has been a huge part of helping me to touch that level of our human existence, that common denominator with all, everybody, no matter where they are in the world.
It takes us deeper than the differences.
Invitarnos a cambiarnos cada uno, y así podremos todos juntos lograr el cambio en el mundo que todos anhelamos y esperamos.
The prayer itself will lead to not only better people, but a better world.
It started with a little seed,
and it fell on good ground. It became a mighty tree, and the birds of the air will rest in its branches. And even when Thomas, God bless him, passes from this world, that tree will be there.
When you think it's in 44 different countries in 30 years, that's pretty much an indication, I think, that the Spirit really wants contemplative life to bring people closer to God.
The contemplative tradition is not going to be lost again in the way that it was.
It could really transform the heart of the world. So, very hopeful.
What would you like to say to the community as they're celebrating their 30th anniversary?
Well, I can only say what the elders in monasteries have always said, which is persevere, meaning keep doing it, and just accept what happens. When you actually consent, you're giving away any control whatsoever over the results of what you're doing.
Thank you. Okay, so you got a little bit broader perspective there. Then I think I broke your mic. No, it's here. And now, because you saw there's been a lot written about Centering Prayer, and Thomas Keating has produced many, many books that are very valuable to read, but because Centering Prayer is not a theology and it's not something to think about, Centering Prayer is an experience. And so, if you're game, we'll do a little bit. What do you think? Okay. Centering Prayer is... Let me see if I can get this thing back together. There we go. Centering Prayer is actually very simple. There are 4 guidelines. The first is to choose a sacred word. Now, this word can be any word at all. It can be a nonsense word, it can be in a foreign language, it can be whatever you want it to be. It is not sacred because of the inherent meaning of that word. It is sacred because it is going to be your symbol of your consent, your intent to consent to God's presence and action within. So you'll choose a word. Then once you have a word, you sit comfortably. Now, these pews don't look too bad. Sit comfortably, and you don't want to be too comfortable, because our bodies are attuned to the fact in this busy world that when we get still, it must be time to sleep. So you don't want to be too comfortable so that your body will go to sleep. You want to stay alert. But and if at all possible, you want to have your back as straight as possible and your feet planted comfortably on the floor. Not your legs crossed or your ankles crossed or anything. This is because of the flow of energy that will help keep you awake. Plus the fact that if you're upright, your skeleton is carrying the weight of your body. And when you sit there for 20 minutes and your skeleton is not doing it, your muscles are doing it, but you're in one position. So your muscles are going to start to scream. So be as straight as you can. Then you close your eyes. Now, this is not a necessity. Some people prefer to have their eyes open, but this is just one symbolic gesture that we are turning inward and closing out the external distractions. And then once you are in position, eyes closed, might take a couple of deep breaths and introduce the sacred word silently. Then this is the most guideline, one that you will use many, many times. When engaged with your thoughts, return ever so gently to your sacred word. Your sacred word is your anchor in the silence. It's your anchor that holds you centered. Thoughts are going to come. This is not about making your mind blank. Our minds think. It's about being detached from those thoughts and just letting them come and letting them go. So you'll catch, those thoughts will go along and all of a sudden there'll come one that's just really attractive and you'll find that you've gone down the river on that boat. And when you realize that, then you just come back to your sacred word. That brings you back to center and is a reinforcement of your intention to be open to the presence and action of God within. You'll do this 100 times. You'll do this 1,000 times. And you just, we in our Western performance-oriented culture, we have a tendency to feel every time this happens, I did it wrong. This wasn't good. I'm not doing it right. There's no right and wrong here. This is the practice. Returning ever so gently to the sacred word. That is the practice. And every time you do that, it's an act of love. It's an act that says, this is where I want to be right now. So that's the practice. And then at the end of your prayer period, to stay in the silence for a moment instead of coming quickly back into ordinary consciousness. To come, stay in the silence a moment and bring that silence with you back into ordinary consciousness and into your activities of the day. You heard on the DVD that they said twice a day, 20 minutes. The 20-minute thing has a biological reason in that apparently it takes the human body about 20 minutes to calm down. So twice a day, 20 minutes kind of reinforces the reservoir of silence that we build up within that we can then live out of. But I always say, hey, in the beginning, you do what you can do. In the beginning, the most important thing is to strengthen that commitment muscle. If you do 5 minutes a day, okay, do you want to do 5 minutes? Okay. Another time, if you're drawn to this prayer, you'll choose, you know, you'll prayerfully choose your sacred word. But for right now, why don't you choose either yes, peace, or Jesus? And then sit comfortably, get yourself in position. Close your eyes. Introduce your sacred word. Amen. Was that the longest 5 minutes ever? Well, now we're open for questions and discussion, whether it's about this 5 minute experience or about anything you've heard today. Yes?
I think I would really have to go up to more than 5 minutes. I mean, it's hard to stop everything.
Yes. Yes, I said that this was a simple method, but it's not an easy one. It's not easy for those of us that live in this very busy culture, and we have very busy lives, and it's hard to stop. And then it's very important, once we make the commitment, it's just very important that we realize these distractions and these thoughts are going to be there. The practice is not about successfully coming to silence quickly. The practice is about returning to center, returning to the sacred word. And just do that over and over again, and you're doing the practice. And over time, then it's like, I heard someone say one time that it's like training a puppy, like paper training a puppy. You want that puppy to learn to pee on the paper, right? Well, he keeps wandering off over into the corner over there, right? What do? You just go over and gently bring the puppy back to the paper. And sooner or later, he gets the idea that that's where he's supposed to be. It's like that. Just keep returning to the sacred word, and slowly you're able to stay there longer. You use that sacred word as much as you need to, and you don't use it when you don't need to. It'll disappear when you are resting. Yes?
Can you speak a little bit about the difference between centering prayer and meditation? I understood what you said. Meditation would be concentrating more on the sacred word.
Yeah, you mean Eastern meditation methods, techniques, yeah. To my mind, there are basically two important differences. And one is that the Eastern methods are, for the most part, concentrative methods. They're techniques, rather, that you know this technique and you concentrate, and there's a progression to the technique. Whereas centering prayer is a receptive method. Now, that is connected with what I think is the second difference, and that is that in our Christian tradition, we believe in a personal God. This means that we believe we are in relationship with the divine, and that prayer is relationship. And so we, in this prayer, are offering ourselves and receiving from the divine. And that is, I think, the major difference. And it's a difference in, I guess it's a difference in attitude as we go. It's a difference in intention as we go into the prayer. We're intending to be open to the presence and action of God. And we're offering, we're opening ourselves to that, and we're receiving from God. Rather than a method that says, do this, do this, do this, do this, and this will happen. Does that help?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, we spent a little bit of time with the Quakers, and I'm wondering, it seems to me that there's a thread there that's similar, in that when you attend the Quaker meeting, people sit in silence until they sense that they're supposed to say something. And we've been in meetings where we've sat for an hour, no one says anything. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not well acquainted with Quaker practices, but I do think, I mean, as I understand it, they sit in silence waiting for the movement of the Spirit. Yeah, I think there's a thread there. This is a method that helps us to open to that. The Quakers may not necessarily have a method other than learning to be still, but that's what this is trying to teach us. Yes?
Where does prayer of petition fit into this?
Oh, yeah. See, that's a very important question. Centering prayer is not at all intended to replace any other prayer practices that you have, any other devotional practice that you have. During the period of centering prayer, it's not appropriate to move into petition or thanksgiving or anything, because those would be thoughts, right? And we're trying to rest in God beyond thoughts. But centering prayer, if you add centering prayer as a practice, then it will tend to add depth to your other practices. But it is not intended to replace them. Yeah. Does that help? Yeah.
I'm sure that each of us in our busy lives might walk out of here saying, I'm going to do that. But as busy lives are busy, we tend to move away from that initial desire to stay with it. So in seeking support, the support one might get would be better, let's say, one-on-one with one of our pastors? Or would you suggest that a group of people who have similar interests would be a suitable way to go?
Either one. If your pastors are open to praying with you in this way, that's wonderful. But that is why centering prayer groups come together, is to support one another in the discipline and the practice of centering prayer. In the beginning, people may find that they just have difficulty finding the time and being able to know, okay, I have an appointment. I go to centering prayer group once a week at this time. You know, at least once a week, you're going to get back into the practice, and slowly that will filter into your daily life. And there's a different energy when you pray in a group this way, which helps. It's supportive as you go into the rest of the week. So if you're able, well, the centering prayer group is meeting here at 6:30 on Tuesday, so all are welcome anytime. And that's not a group that you have to commit to, like, okay, I got to be there every Tuesday. It's when you can come, come. Is that helpful? Anything else? Yes. Hi, Sandy. So this is just an abstract thing.
Yeah, a shape.
A shape. And you're tending to use that as your sacred symbol.
I have a sacred word, and that symbol also helps me stay visually focused.
Okay.
Inwardly
visually. Yeah, yeah. Generally speaking, yeah, that would be in the umbrella term of centering prayer. That would be a thought, and you would want to let that go. If it for right now helps you and is not, you know, a picture that you are then looking at in all detail, right? This is just a spot, right?
Yeah, that I focus on.
Uh-huh.
Like shade, green, and that's...
Oh, so you think about it.
Oh, well, you put it that way.
Oh, I trapped you. No, then you need to let that go. No. Just go back to your sacred word.
By the way, if I might say, I did attend, and I don't want to talk to you about why that's changed a little bit, but I really would highly recommend it. I mean, I'm a hopeless case, and if I could, and if I could even come anywhere near that, but it just, honestly, I know that you're not supposed to look for results, but it feels good. It feels calming, and Nana's wonderful, so I can't recommend it enough to everyone.
Thank you. Yes. Called what?
A labyrinth.
Uh-huh, yes.
And we have one out there.
Yes.
In the garden, and a portable one appears various places and times. What is the difference, or is there a difference, between the contemplation within a labyrinth framework and this centering prayer?
Well, the labyrinth is a wonderful contemplative opportunity. But the labyrinth can be used in so many different meaningful ways. And I know when the labyrinth is put out here during Holy Week, the suggestions for meditation as you walk the labyrinth are there. And those are, that's one way, but that's mental meditation. That's thinking about these things as you go along, which is very meaningful. That's a very, very good practice. But the labyrinth can also be used contemplatively in this way as well, in that it's a walking meditation. And you just move into the walk and move into the silence and use your sacred word. Yeah. During our 5-minute practice there, we had a little distraction out there. Did anybody notice? That when you do centering prayer, you begin to look at those things as opportunities to let go. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, that's what centering prayer is about. It's about being present in this moment in your body. And the more you do that, the more you're able to be in the moment in your daily activities and let go of other distractions. Is that a signal? What time is it? Yes, it's 1:45. So I thank you all very much.